Forum Nation is a podcast of United Philanthropy Forum, the largest network serving philanthropy in America. On Forum Nation, we interview amazing philanthropy leaders that we want more people to know about. You'll hear about their personal stories of transformation, their life inflection points, their surprising leadership moments. You'll learn insights about what's behind the title, those less than perfect moments, those overcoming the odds moments, those moments where you reach down and find something within you that you didn't know was there.
I'm your host, Dave Beamsterfer. Amanda Masiko Andiri has spent her entire career so far fighting to prevent and end homelessness and break the cycle of poverty. She has worked in the nonprofit sector, the public sector, and now the philanthropic sector. For the past 4 years, she has served as chief executive officer of Funders Together to End Homelessness, which is the only national network of grantmakers working to end and prevent homelessness. Amanda currently serves on the board of directors of United Philanthropy Forum, which is the organization I happen to run. Amanda, welcome to Forum Nation.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you here. Welcome to our studio.
This is great.
Yes, exciting. Yes. So as I just said, you've spent your entire adult career so far fighting for people who are less fortunate in our communities, in our country, specifically working to prevent and end homelessness and break the cycle of poverty. So I'm just really curious, what's behind your passion for this work, and why do you do it day in and day out?
That's a great question, Dave, and I think there's many reasons that brings me to my work. First and foremost, my faith. I am a Christian, and I believe that it's our duty to do for others, but not for others in a charity type of way, to work on justice on behalf of people and with people. And so I feel like I've been blessed with so much and that I need to give it forward, pay it forward, and create a more just world around me. But when I think about the roots of like why I care so much about poverty and housing insecurity and ending homelessness, I think about my parents. They are both immigrants to this country, and they came at a time during the end of the civil rights movement. And for them, coming from predominantly Black countries, it was a shock to their system. They didn't quite know where to fit in. They experienced racial discrimination in ways that still jar them to this day. And there were people, strangers, who helped them along the way. And those people made a lasting impression on their lives and on my life. And my parents always said, if it wasn't for those folks who provided them with opportunities, just were a friendly, warm place for them, that we wouldn't be where we were as a family. And as a family growing up in a pretty upper class neighborhood in Northern Virginia, right outside of D.C., it was always striking to me, and now I realize more what I saw, that while we had a lot, there were kids in my class who didn't. And I'm sure that there were nights that they didn't have food to eat, that they were wondering how they were going to stay in their home. And that impacted their education and impacted their ability to do the fun stuff that I got to do. And my parents instilled in me that we can't live in a community where that is happening, that we should have a diverse community where everyone feels stable and welcome and is included. And so that really drove my passion to seek out why that doesn't happen for people.
Mm, right. And where did your parents immigrate from?
My mom is from Jamaica. My dad's from Kenya. They met while going to school in California.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. What university do you know?
Well, my mom went to a small, which I don't think is still around, Catholic university called Notre Dame, so not the big Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And my dad went to community college for a while and then went to University of Northern California.
And then they ended up in Northern Virginia?
Ended up a lot of different places. Okay. So they went to graduate school in Washington State. And that's actually one of the families that had the most impact on our lives in my younger life, a white family who had never met a Black person in their life. They're from Walla Walla, Washington. Took in my mom and dad when they were in graduate school. They were their host family. And I called them grandma and grandpa. And, you know, we had a lot of interesting discussions around race from when I was a young age. But their openness and kindness and sense of justice also impacted my family in a great way. So those are the examples I'm talking about, like just people who took in my family and communities where that was like not the thing to do.
Right.
So my parents trekked over to the East Coast. My dad was in banking. My mom is in food service. And that was another way that I started to do this work. My mom was a director of cafeterias and companies that employed mostly low-income workers. And just seeing my mom have a real commitment to taking them on a career path that would make them stable and doing things for her employees to help them in their life, not just professionally, but personally, was really important to me. And I saw my mom do that in a way where she didn't have to. I mean, she worked in corporate America. She was very successful, but she really cared about her employees and wanted them to have a safe place to go home to and a family that felt stable and nurtured.
So those kind of values obviously carried over to you,
yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, so. Well, I hope so.
Seems like it. Yeah, clearly.
And a sense of justice really came from seeing so many injustices, even when times when my mom would try to help people and knowing that, like, at that time, things like healthcare and the way that we have it now, we're still fighting for it, had an impact on the people that she was trying to help. And so just knowing that even when you help people, there's injustices in the world. And so we have to think of, for me, fighting for a policy change and systems change. And it felt like not enough for me to just help one person, which is great. I think that's can be a lot of people's life's work, but I just wanted to see things change for many more people in a long-term way.
So you're in Northern Virginia. What kind of high school? Was it a diverse student body?
It was. It was a diverse high school. We ethnically, racially, economically, I think though people think of Fairfax County or that, you know, places like that is really wealthy. And that's actually where I started my career in working in preventing and ending homelessness. And people would always say, like, there's poverty and homelessness in Reston, one of the highest income counties in the country. And actually that is, I thought when I graduated from school, I wanted to work in DC. What I didn't realize is there was the suburbanization of poverty was happening right in my backyard, and people didn't know about it, and people didn't know that there were people suffering in this wealthy community and why. And that became my passion too, like waking up people that poverty and housing insecurity was actually because of the success of areas, that many of the people who supported the business growth were still struggling to maintain their housing and just live right in their backyard.
So, you know, it can be easy for somebody who living in those communities who is better off to only see the good parts and not the sort of downsides of that. But you have an ability or an interest in seeing that, but not everybody does. Everyone else can say, "Oh, well, fair." Like you said, what a wonderful community! Everything's just A-okay with everybody.
Yeah.
So, but you were able to see the other side, and I guess that sounds like something you've always sort of done in your life, is to be sensitive to everything. Even though you grew up in a more well-off family, as you said, you saw students who weren't, and you noticed that. So I see a trend here in your work.
Yeah, it's uncovering what is really happening behind what we sometimes see as okay, and also reimagining what is okay. So to me, like the fact, not that people are suffering in my community, but we recently moved back to Reston, and it was because we wanted to be around a diverse community, diverse incomes. I believe a community is thriving when people don't all look alike, don't all come from the same background, and people are trying to move up in the world or figure out their North Star, their success. And that to me feels like community. And so I think in those circumstances now in the country we live in, that means that some people do suffer. But what would it look like? How do we imagine a community where someone doesn't need to be go to a high-stress corporate job just to be able to be stable in their home, and that we value people at every income, at every ability to at least have a safe and decent place to live.
Right, right. Wonderful sentiment. Wonderful. So then you went on to get your BA in political science at James Madison University. And what was it? What made you decide poli-sci was the way you wanted to go?
Well, I think like most things in my life, I never have a straight path to things, but they always work out the way that they want to. So I actually transferred to James Madison University from the University of Richmond because I wanted to pursue a theater career. I had done theater all my life.
Yeah.
And when I went to University of Richmond, I was very focused on doing political science. And in that program, it was a lot of theory, and I didn't feel like I was like doing something like really understanding what was happening on the ground. And I thought, you know, the last time I felt that type of passion was during theater, and maybe I should just go to JMU and do their theater program and become a theater teacher. Well, what I figured out was that theater is still a great passion of mine. Performing is a great passion of mine, but sometimes your passions are not always your professional careers or your professional journeys. And I still had a sense of wanting to do policy and justice. And what I found at JMU and their poli-sci program, it was really centered around like, what does it mean to do campaign work? And they had the first political communication program, and professors who were like on the ground, and amazing Washington, D.C. semester where I got to live in D.C. in a neighborhood that I don't think any student or any person now could afford, and be surrounded by people who are doing internships in amazing places. And so political science to me was just figuring out, like, how does it all work? And, you know, most people who get a B.A. in political science go and work on the Hill. I did that for a very short time. But working on the Hill really, again, to like seeing something that wasn't there, what I saw was not the right people coming to do policy and advocacy, and really wondered where were the groups that I had volunteered with as a kid and as a teenager who were working on the ground, where were they? Like, they had stories to tell. And so I really wanted to see like what was happening in the nonprofit human services area and why they didn't have the ability to do policy and advocacy. And the reality is a lot of those organizations, it's changing now, but gosh, 15 years ago, didn't have the resources and the capacity to do the policy and advocacy, even though they wanted to. They wanted to work themselves out of a job, and you can only do that sometimes through policy change. So I got into doing fundraising to build the capacity for organizations to think about doing policy and communication and working together at the state level and at the federal level. So that's a little bit about my path and my journey. Mm-hmm. I still sometimes feel like there's a little bit of theater in political science and policy. And so, and I get to do a lot of public speaking. And so bringing in my theater background, and then also just being able to have fun in my work is really important too. And I think that comes from my theater background as well.
So you were doing theater in high school?
In high school, like, and a little bit in college.
Acting, doing the front plays? And
I did acting. I was in our show choir, and I did backstage stuff as well, which is actually when I was an assistant director, did backstage work. It's where I learned a lot of my leadership skills. Like, you had to rally your peers together. Yeah. And we thought we were pretty professional in our high school theater productions. And we did everything from the marketing to the directing. And it was a really eye-opening experience. And the skills that I learned stick with me today.
And there's definitely a lot of theater in policy. Not a little. I think there's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
In policy. And so... they do still like dabble in it, like community, or have you thought about that?
I have thought about it. Quite frankly, I don't have the time
to do it.
But every time I go see a production, like recently I saw a Chorus Line at Signature Theater, and I just wanted to leap and jump on stage. And instead I went home and watched the movie and sang. And my husband was like, oh my gosh, who did I marry?
So you get it out at home.
Yes, exactly. And a great supporter of theater as well.
Yes. So, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Sure. And then you at some point got your MPA in nonprofit management. So that George Mason. So by that time you knew nonprofit management, and that was going to be your career path, not theater.
Yeah. So I'm actually really glad. A lot of people take the path of getting their master's right after their BA, which is great. I'm glad that I did. And I probably would have got my master's in political science, which would have been fine. But there was something about that really intrigued me about what does it take to actually make a nonprofit run, and what is the mechanics behind it? How does it interface with the world? And so the nonprofit MPA program at George Mason was also great because we had a lot of professors who were working in the nonprofit or policy or public works field, and so they would like be rushing into class from their day job and tell great stories about like how it actually worked and happened, and also got a lot of practical skills. And then shortly after, I went back and started teaching nonprofit studies, not in the master's program but in the BA program, and so like total full circle mm-hmm. in terms of my career path. Yeah, which is a lot of fun. I taught for I think like 8 years there, and it's something that I really do miss. It was one of the greatest joys of my career, is teaching students who, way before I knew, wanted to get into the nonprofit field. I think that's what's so exciting about our field now. There's young people who are like, no, this is what I want to do. And I think sometimes in my generation or older, people are like, oh, I kind of fell into it.
Yeah, that's what I say a lot.
Yeah.
And that's, and there's theater in being a professor, right?
Yes.
And performing in front of the students.
Absolutely. A theme. You see a theme. Yeah.
I do see a theme here. And then you have, as I mentioned at the outset, you've been working in the nonprofit sector. You've done work in the public sector. Now, for the last 4 years, in the philanthropic sector. What brought you to decide to do work in the philanthropic sector? How did that path happen for you, and what are your 4 years in? You and I think we both met within, I think, like we're both in our jobs a couple months.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I remember that clearly. So since then and now too, what are your impressions? Your initial impressions of working in this sector?
Yeah, it's interesting. I always debate when people say, oh, we work in philanthropy. And mm-hmm. I know we had some of these discussions when we were all gathered as CEOs of philanthropic serving organizations. Like, what's our exact role? So I always start by saying I work in ending homelessness. And for me, that's the most important thing. And there's a lot of pieces to ending homelessness, and philanthropy and funders are one of those sectors and pieces. And so that was another path that I kind of fell into. If I want to just be candid and vulnerable, I was running a national organization that was in the process of merging with another organization and closing. And it was probably one of the most difficult times in my life. I had run organizations before and always was the person or the CEO who could fix any problem and make it a success. And now I know in reflection that sometimes failure is not failure. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. organizations need to close and go in a different direction, but didn't have that perspective at the time. And, you know, I thought that I wanted to do policy and advocacy and kind of move away from doing homelessness. But there was something about this job that spoke to me. Funders Together to End Homelessness had always had a presence at the National Alliance to End Homelessness conferences when I attended, leading my Virginia team to do federal policy and advocacy. And I thought, again, I thought back to like when I first started working on the Hill, like, what is philanthropy doing? Like, what are funders actually doing in this space that would be interesting to try to influence? And so it was kind of a, well, why not? you know, kind of thing. I mean, obviously I have a passion around ending homelessness, but as I started to meet now my board and saw their thoughtfulness for a different vision for ending homelessness, a real vision around not just a charity mindset, but really thinking about investing in systems change and policy and engaging in advocacy and being able to influence that and bring people together, it felt like the right place. And at the time, I also was really focused on wanting to do racial equity and racial justice work. And I did not know that I would get to do that at this organization. And I've been able to do it in a deeper way than I could have ever imagined, with people who really care deeply about it. So I think what I've learned is that in the last 4 years is that funders can have an incredible amount of influence and power, but they can also learn and be critical of themselves and change in ways that slowly, but change in ways that allow for us to imagine new ways of doing things that that start to examine how we have all these inequities and why we have a country that is deeply rooted in structural racism, and just the humbleness and the honestness of that philanthropy has been a cause of a lot of those structural inequities, but wanting to fix it. I found an incredible amount of joy working with leaders who know so much, are so willing to learn, and are so deeply caring about changing the community around them. And it's an incredible job. What I find that I like the most about my job, which I didn't know, was that a lot of my job, a lot of my work, my passion is just helping people. I feel like I'm a coach a lot of times, coaching organizations, their board, our members, individuals, to see the possibilities, to see that they can center racial equity in their work, to understand that they do have a voice in policy and advocacy. And just the working one-on-one and being a confidant for folks and like building the capacity for other people to do their work, it feels weird, but it really does bring me joy, and it's a gift that I think that I have. And it's been great to see the field of philanthropy really change to be more honest and vulnerable and understanding where they've enabled some inequities and starting to unpack a lot of that.
In part two of my interview with Amanda Masiko Andere, she recounts how her organization raised the issue of putting a racial equity agenda at the core of their work to end homelessness.
First day of my job, my all-white staff gave me a list of things that they thought that we should focus on, and on the top of that list was addressing racial equity. My board took me out to dinner at my second week on the job at our first big conference and said, if we're not addressing structural racism, we won't end homelessness. And so I always tell that story because I think people want to believe that me as a Black woman came into this job and said like, oh, we should be talking about race, and not realizing like a lot of Black leaders, that's not the first thing they want to address because they're Black and all the things that come with that.
Continue listening to part two of my interview with Amanda Masiko Andere on Forum Nation, presented by United Philanthropy Forum.